Langdon followed the captain down the famous marble staircase into the sunken atrium beneath the glass pyramid. As they descended, they passed between two armed judicial police guards with semi-automatic machine guns. The message was clear. Nobody goes in or out tonight without the blessing of Captain Fash. As they dropped further into the subterranean foyer, the yawning space slowly emerged from the shadows. Built 57 feet beneath ground level, the Louvre's newly constructed 70,000 square foot lobby spread out like an endless grotto.
How well did you know Jacques Saunier?
The captain asked as he set a rapid pace. Actually, not at all. We'd never met. Fash looked surprised.
Your first meeting was to be tonight?
Yes. We'd planned to meet at the American University reception following my lecture. But he never showed up. As they walked, Langdon caught a glimpse of the Louvre's lesser-known pyramid, Le Pyramide Inversée, a huge inverted skylight that hung from the ceiling like a stalactite in an adjoining section of the entresol. Fash guided Langdon up a short set of stairs to the mouth of an arched tunnel, over which a sign read, Denon. The Denon wing was the most famous of the Louvre's three main sections.
Who requested tonight's meeting?
Fash asked suddenly.
You or he?
The question seemed odd. Mr. Saunier did, Langdon replied as they entered the tunnel. His secretary contacted me a few weeks ago via email. She said the curator had heard I would be lecturing in Paris this month and wanted to discuss something with me while I was here.
Discuss what?
I don't know. Art, I imagine. We share similar interests. Fash looked skeptical.
You have no idea what your meeting was about?
Langdon did not. He'd been curious at the time, but had not felt comfortable demanding specifics. The monolithic Jacques Saunier had a renowned penchant for privacy and granted very few meetings. Langdon was grateful simply for the opportunity to meet him.
So you shared interests with him?
Fash asked as they walked on. Yes. In fact, I've spent much of the last year writing the draft for a book that deals with Mr. Saunier's primary area of expertise. I was looking forward to learning his thoughts on the topic.
I see. And what is the topic?
Langdon hesitated, uncertain exactly how to put it. Essentially, the manuscript is about the iconography of goddess worship, the concept of female sanctity, and the art and symbols associated with it.
And Saunier was knowledgeable about this?
Nobody more so.
Perhaps Jacques Saunier knew of your manuscript,
Fash offered,
and he called the meeting to offer his help on your book.
Langdon shook his head. Actually, nobody yet knows about my manuscript. It's still in draft form, and I haven't shown it to anyone except my editor. Fash fell silent. Langdon did not add the reason he hadn't yet shown the manuscript to anyone else. The 300-page draft, tentatively titled Symbols of the Lost Sacred Feminine, proposed some very unconventional interpretations of established religious iconography, and would certainly be controversial. Fash stopped in front of an elevator. The lift doors opened, and they stepped in. The elevator jolted to a stop, and the doors opened.
This way,
Fash said as he stepped out and led the way through a series of interconnected galleries. Soon the sound of voices echoed down the marble corridor. The noise seemed to be coming from a large recessed alcove ahead on the right. A bright light spilled out into the hallway.
Office of the curator,
the captain said. As he and Fash drew nearer the alcove, Langdon peered down a short hallway into Saunier's luxurious study. Warm wood, old master paintings, and an enormous antique desk on which stood a 2-foot-tall model of a medieval knight in full armor. A handful of police agents bustled about the room, talking on phones and taking notes. Apparently, the curator's private office had become DCPJ's makeshift command post for the evening.
Messieurs,
Fash called out, and the men turned.
Ne nous dérangez pas sous aucun prétexte, entendu?
Everyone inside the office nodded their understanding. Fash and Langdon were not to be disturbed under any circumstances. Leaving the small congregation of agents behind, Fash led Langdon farther down the darkened hallway. 30 yards ahead loomed the gateway to the Louvre's most famous section, Le Grand Galerie, a seemingly endless corridor that housed the Louvre's most valuable Italian masterpieces. As they approached, Langdon saw the entrance was blocked by an enormous steel grate that looked like something used by medieval castles to keep out marauding armies.
Containment security,
Fash said as they neared the grate. Arriving outside, Langdon peered through the bars into the dimly lit caverns of the Grand Gallery.
After you, Mr. Langdon,
Fash said, and motioned toward the floor at the base of the grate. Langdon looked down. In the darkness, he hadn't noticed. The barricade was raised about 2 feet, providing an awkward clearance underneath.
My PTS team has just finished their investigation, Fash said. Please, slide under.
Langdon stared at the narrow crawl space at his feet and then up at the massive iron grate. The barricade looked like a guillotine waiting to crush intruders. Fash grumbled something in French and checked his watch. Then he dropped to his knees and slithered his bulky frame underneath the grate. On the other side, he stood up and looked back through the bars at Langdon. Langdon sighed. Placing his palms flat on the polished parquet, he lay on his stomach and pulled himself forward. Gazing out the window at the dark Atlantic, Bishop Manuel Aringarosa sat aboard a commercial airliner bound for Rome. The sun had already set, but Aringarosa knew his own star was on the rise.
Tonight the battle will be won, he thought,
amazed that only months ago he had felt powerless against the hands that threatened to destroy his empire. As President General of Opus Dei, Bishop Aringarosa had spent the last decade of his life spreading the message of God's work, literally, Opus Dei. The congregation, founded in 1928, promoted a return to conservative Catholic values and encouraged its members to make sweeping sacrifices in their own lives in order to do the work of God. Opus Dei was now a global force. Residence halls, teaching centers, and even universities could be found in almost every major metropolis on Earth. Opus Dei was the fastest-growing and most financially secure Catholic organization in the world. As the jet passed over the coast of Portugal, the cell phone in Aringarosa's cassock began vibrating in silent ring mode. Only one man possessed the number, the man who had mailed Aringarosa the phone. Excited, the bishop answered,
Yes?
Silas has located the keystone, the caller said. It is in Paris, within the church of Saint-Sulpice.
Bishop Aringarosa smiled. He had been right to offer the services of his most trusted numerary.
Then we are close, he said. We can obtain it immediately, but we need your influence.
Of course. Tell me what to do.